Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 8th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Doctor, Hospital's ER staff is exhausted. Dr. Sam Kantker said staff are tired from working during the pandemic. By Caitlin Randall. Dr. Sam Kantker, Assistant Medical Director of the Emergency Department at Midland Memorial Hospital, provided perspective Tuesday on how the latest COVID-19 surge is impacting the hospital's emergency room. Kantker said during the Midland Health briefing that the physicians and nurses in the emergency department are exhausted from working during multiple waves of the coronavirus pandemic over the last year and a half. On Tuesday morning, there were 22 patients in the ER waiting for beds to become available so they could be admitted to the hospital. Kantker said the majority of these are COVID-19 patients, but some also need treatment for heart attacks, surgical problems, and other conditions. It's not just a COVID problem, and it's hard for us to take care of the other patients, he said. Most COVID-19 patients are unvaccinated, and when asked why they chose not to receive the vaccine, many say they didn't believe the coronavirus was a serious problem, or they hadn't found the time yet, according to Kantker. He spoke about a man who was admitted for COVID-19, whose wife was vaccinated, but he was not. Kantker said the patient's wife did not contract the virus while the man became seriously ill. Echoing other officials, Kantker said many of the COVID-19 patients who are becoming critically ill and needing ventilators are younger than in previous surges. He said they're seeing large numbers of those with severe disease who are in their 20s and 30s. It's very sad because this could have been avoided, he said. Here are the other highlights from Tuesday's press conference. There were 237 patients in the hospital Tuesday morning, and of those, 109 were coronavirus patients. That's a slight decrease from a peak of 124 COVID-19 patients last week. The age ranges of the COVID-19 patients are from 3 weeks old to 91 years old, according to Chief Operating Officer Steve Bowerman. He said the three-week-old patient was admitted for COVID-19 and not another condition. About 13% of the COVID-19 patients are from outside Midland County, with Del Rio being the furthest distance a patient was transferred from. There were 27 employees quarantining with COVID-19 on Tuesday, and another 104 employees who have been exposed and are self-monitoring. The positivity rate for Midland Health testing dropped from the 30s to the mid-20s, Bowerman said. He said that's not enough of a drop to have an impact on the hospital, and the positivity rate will need to fall below 10% before it affects admissions. The number of fully vaccinated individuals in Midland County has increased to 42% of those 12 and older, and about 52% of the population has received an initial dose. This article is entitled, Officials, Quakes in Midland to Continue, by Stuart Doreen. The 3.7 magnitude earthquake that shook some of Midland on Monday wasn't the first tremor to happen north-northwest of Midland, and officials believe it won't be the last. That is what seismologists have said, and what Midland City Councilman Scott Dufford told the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday. Dufford, an oil man, said water disposal will be a reason that seismic activity will take place in and around Midland for the foreseeable future. The earthquake Monday was the ninth in the last month from an area generally north-northwest of Midland, around 8.69 to 9.94 miles from Midland, according to the website earthquaketrack.com. This cluster of quakes have ranged from the sub 2.0 magnitude to Monday night's 3.7 magnitude, the strongest to hit in or around Midland since December 31st, when a 4.0 magnitude quake was reported north of Stanton. Note, the USGS updated the magnitude Tuesday afternoon from the 3.5 magnitude originally reported. Add an area around 10 miles to the north of that cluster, and there were another three quakes reported on August 30th. It's going to be with us for a very long time unless we find a different solution to our water disposal needs, Scott Dufford messaged to the reporter Telegram, and I don't see much changing in the near term with how we dispose of our produced water. The earthquake on Monday night took place around 10:05 p.m., 9.94 miles away from Midland, at a depth of 4.47 miles, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Comments on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page indicated people felt the earthquake from Gardendale to Grassland West to Greenwood. The earthquake was the fourth in the last 7 days, the 19th in the last 30 days, and the 189th in and around Midland in the last 365 days, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The same website shows 1,033 earthquakes in the past 365 days around the Pecos region. That is more than twice the number of quakes in and around Los Angeles, California, 391, during the same period. It was also the third of four earthquakes with a magnitude of 3.5 or higher in 8 days between the Midland region and the region north of Pecos, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. A 4.3 magnitude quake took place September 3rd, northwest of Pecos, not far from Guadalupe Peak or the Texas-New Mexico line. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt but only causes minor damage, according to UPSIAS, an educational site for seismologists. Recent quakes in north-northwest Midland. September 6th, 3.75 magnitude, 9.94 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.34 miles. September 3rd, 2.4 magnitude, 7.45 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.97 miles. September 2nd, 1.9 magnitude, 9.34 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.34 miles. August 28th, 2.2 magnitude, 8.69 miles from Midland, at a depth of 6.21 miles. August 25th, 1.8 magnitude, 8.69 miles from Midland, at a depth of 6.83 miles. August 23rd, 1.5 magnitude, 7.45 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.97 miles. August 16th, 2.8 magnitude, 9.32 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.34 miles. August 14th, 2.7 magnitude, 8.69 miles from Midland, at a depth of 3.72 miles. August 8th, 2.0 magnitude, 9.32 miles from Midland, at a depth of 4.34 miles. Source, EarthquakeTrack.com. This article is entitled Small Bites. Get ready for Blue Sky's Grand Opening, by J.C. Lewis. Midland's first blue sky is getting ready to open at 3001 West Loop 250 North in the coming weeks. For the exact opening date, follow Blue Sky on Facebook. Owner Craig Bingham said he is excited to finally bring the franchise to the Permian Basin. Bingham also owns the two restaurants in Lubbock and the one in Abilene. Geographically, it made sense to open in Midland, he said. This was the only other West Texas town that we haven't been to that is big enough to support one. We felt the timing was right, plus we have a lot of brand recognition in Midland. Everything at Blue Sky is a fresh product, Bingham said. Patties are made fresh, buns are baked fresh at a local bakery, and the restaurant has very few frozen products. The burger chain also features mayo instead of ketchup on burgers, but don't worry, patrons can always request ketchup and no mayo. The location has a nice shaded patio area with a sandbox play area for kids that is being finished this week. It's a family atmosphere that is casual and fun, as well as inexpensive, featuring quality food, he added. Children can enjoy more than just the sandbox. On Tuesdays, the restaurant serves 99-cent kids' meals. The kids' menu includes choice of fries, tots, Jell-O, or a fruit cup, with two mini burgers or two mini corn dogs, all-beef hot dog, grilled cheese, chicken bits, or corn dog. "We are primarily known for our hamburgers, cheeseburgers, and all that," Bingham said. "We have a protein plate that is low-carb and salads that are excellent. We have a small variety, but everything we do is fresh." The main menu features burger, cheeseburger, bacon cheeseburger, chili cheeseburger, green chili cheeseburger, guacamole cheeseburger, mushroom Swiss, double cheeseburger on white, wheat, or gluten-free buns. Patrons can choose from grilled chicken, Greek chicken, hot ham and cheese, or blue sky Texas cheesesteak sandwiches. The menu has two hot dog options, a regular or chili queso hot dog. There is also a variety of salads, including Frito pie salad topped with chili and queso. Special plates include a low-carb protein diet with two burger patties or two chicken breasts with choice of topping, the blue sky steak and fries, chicken fried steak with fries, and chicken tenders with fries and gravy. Shakes and floats feature premium Bluebell ice cream that are blended the old-fashioned way. Inside the restaurant, tables display advertisements of local businesses. The walls have neon beer signs, including a couple of signs for Yuengling beer. There are road signs lining the lower parts of the walls, and 7 TVs play sports channels on silent. The restaurant serves beer and wine in drafts, bottles, and buckets of beer. Hours of operation will be 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and closed on Sundays once the restaurant officially opens. More food news. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market will return September 18th. This weekend, the Museum of the Southwest is hosting Septemberfest on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on the museum's lawn. Low Street Books announced new hours of Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., at 201 West Wall Street. Ranch House Golden Glazed Hams, 5103 West Wadley Avenue, has closed its restaurant door after more than 34 years of serving the community. Ranch House will continue operations as a catering service. In a posted statement, owner Greg Golden said that he did everything he could to keep the restaurant open. "The nature of my business has changed steadily for the last 10 years or so, and as prices of pork have risen, I have tried to stay reasonably priced and worth shopping local. Unfortunately, that time has come to an end, and the Ranch House Golden Glazed Hams will be closing its doors effective immediately." "Throughout the pandemic, employees and cost of goods have become unsustainable, and we feel it's time to change the way we operate. Our storefront will be closing, and we will be operating only as the Ranch House Golden Glazed Hams Catering. The phone number for catering is 699-0695. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled P&Z Report: Senior Life Gets Green Light to Expand, by Mella McEwen. Members of the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday gave Senior Life Midland the green light to proceed with redevelopment of its location at 3301 Sinclair Avenue. Commissioners unanimously approved a request by Stephen T. Markham for a zone change from SF1, single-family dwelling district to 01, planned development district for an office center at the location. Senior Life had been operating under a specific use permit, allowing the property to be used as a senior citizen center. Changes to the zoning ordinance did not allow this special use permit, so the new zoning will allow Senior Life flexibility for use of the facility. William Parsons with the Vandergriff Group told commissioners he is working with the nonprofit to design a new facility at the existing site to replace the current facility, which was a home donated to Senior Life. Senior Life will be relocating its services temporarily while the new facility is built. Plans for the new facility call for 28,837 square feet of building, with 23 office spaces, 3 conference rooms, a handyman shop, and the Meals on Wheels kitchen and distribution center, storage rooms, a receiving area, and volunteer pickup area. Parsons added that the nonprofit agency does not want to leave the location because it sits in the center of Midland, facilitating service to the entire city. Commissioners also paved the way for a new indoor trampoline and adventure park at 5606 Starboard Drive, adjacent to Synergy Cinemas. Maverick Engineering's request for a zone change from PD, Planned District for a Housing Development, to RR, Regional Retail District, received unanimous approval. The location, currently unused, will be developed into 2 retail spaces, one of approximately 16,000 square feet and the second approximately 6,800 square feet. In other action, Jovel LLC received approval of its request for a zone change from RR, Regional Retail, to LI, Light Industrial, to allow for construction of a storage warehouse for their equipment and materials. Jovel operates Frank's International at 10306 West State Highway 191 and Terracon at 10400 West State Highway 191. Approved a proposal preliminary plat of Ruckus Addition, a 2.489-acre tract at Fairgrounds Road and East Loop 250 North, to allow applicant Schumann Engineering to obtain building permits. This article is entitled, Abbott Defends Abortion Law with No Rape Exceptions, by Paul J. Weber and Jamie Stengel. Dallas. Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Tuesday defended a new state law banning most abortions that also does not provide exceptions for cases of rape or incest, saying it does not force victims to give birth, even though it prohibits abortions before some women know they're pregnant. Abbott, a Republican, added that Texas would strive to eliminate all rapists from the streets, while taking questions during his first press conference since the law took effect last week. The comments drew new criticism from opponents of the Texas law that is the biggest curb on abortion in the U.S. since they were legalized a half century ago, prohibiting abortions once medical professionals can detect cardiac activity, which is usually around 6 weeks. Though abortion providers in Texas say the law is unconstitutional, they say they are abiding by it. His comments are confusing to me because they certainly do not seem to reflect the realities of this law, said Amy Jones, the chief executive officer of the Dallas Area Rape Crisis Center. Recent surveys by the U.S. Department of Justice found that most rapes go unreported to police, including a 2019 survey that found about 1 in 3 victims reporting they were raped or sexually assaulted. Abbott signed the measure into law in May. Although other GOP-led states have passed similar measures, they have been blocked by courts. Texas's version differs significantly because it solely leaves enforcement to private citizens who can sue abortion providers who violate the law. Abbott was asked about the new abortion restrictions while signing into law an overhaul of Texas's election rules. Texas will work tirelessly to make sure that we eliminate all rapists from the streets of Texas by aggressively going out and arresting them and prosecuting them, Abbott said. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Drops as Stronger Dollar Offsets Ongoing Crude Shut-ins, by Sheila Taubin, Bloomberg. Oil closed lower for a second session as the dollar rose, offsetting bullish Chinese trade data and continued production outages in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico. Futures in New York fell 1.4%, with a stronger dollar making commodities priced in the currency less attractive. Meanwhile, the industry was still assessing the impact on oil assets from Hurricane Ida. Nearly 80% of crude oil production in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico remains offline. WTI is basically getting thumbed down by the rising U.S. dollar, said Bart Mellick, head of commodity strategy at TD Securities. Fears of slower-than-expected economic growth due to the Delta variant of the coronavirus and the impending Federal Reserve's asset tapering later in 2021 may be prompting a pullback in risk appetite, he added. The fast-spreading Delta variant has raised demand concerns in recent weeks, though China was able to swiftly contain its latest outbreak. The Asian country's overall imports also rose, with crude purchases climbing to a five-month high, pointing to a revival in the region's biggest economic recovery following a recent wave of COVID-19 infections. There are expectations that the global oil market will tighten over the rest of 2021, with the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies deciding last week to keep boosting supply on a bet that the recovery will accelerate. Post-Ida recovery efforts are still continuing, with the storm's initial impact to oil greater than any other storm in history. Royal Dutch Shell PLC said its returning staff to its Auger and Enchilada Salsa oil and natural gas platforms in the Gulf, though those assets and others remain shut. Prices for regional sour crude benchmark Mars Blend surged to a seven-month high supply due to supply uncertainty. Among Louisiana refiners, ExxonMobil Corporation and Marathon Petroleum Corporation said parts of their respective crude processing plants were back in service. This article is entitled, Gas Groups Beg for Regulation, by Jennifer A. DeLuey, Bloomberg. The threat of a new fee on methane emissions has put the oil and gas industry in the unusual position of pleading with lawmakers for more federal regulation instead. More than 100 trade groups, local chambers of commerce, and other organizations from New Mexico to Pennsylvania are warning that the fee proposed to help pay for Democrats' $3.5 trillion spending plan would roil energy markets and boost consumer bills nationwide. In a letter to Senate leaders Tuesday, they argued a far better approach is to rely on existing federal regulations and tougher new mandates the Environmental Protection Agency is set to propose within weeks. If the objective is to reduce methane emissions, direct regulation of methane is the best method to implement such a government policy and do so in an equitable manner that is tied to actual emissions, the group said. By contrast, the congressional plan would levy an unreasonable punitive fee on methane emissions only from oil and natural gas facilities that could jeopardize affordable and reliable energy, with likely little reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. The letter, organized by the American Petroleum Institute, marks the escalation of energy and utilities companies' fight against the proposed fee on emissions of methane, the primary ingredient of natural gas, as congressional committees draft the legislative details of the broad tax and spending plan. Separately, the American Gas Association, that represents natural gas utilities, on Friday launched a campaign against the proposed fee it called devastating for families and businesses. Industry allies are making appeals to moderate Democrats and those representing oil and gas-rich states, whose votes on the budget bill could be decisive in the evenly divided Senate. That includes Senator Joe Manchin, the powerful Democratic chairman of the Energy Committee, who has argued the soaring natural debt demands a significantly smaller plan, and whose home state of West Virginia is the sixth-ranking U.S. natural gas producer. Senate Democrats included a placeholder for their fee in their budget plan, but details are still being developed, and there's no guarantee it will pass the evenly divided chamber. The measure could be modeled on legislation proposed by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island that would set the fee at $1,800 per ton starting in 2023. Supporters say the fee could hasten industry efforts to keep a tighter lid on methane, which is 84 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at warming the atmosphere in the first two decades after its release.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 8, 2021. Council Considers Upping Rates by Frederico Martinez. The average Odessa homeowner will pay a total of $1.93 more per month for water, sewer, and solid waste services, according to a rate increase being considered by City Council. Council, which briefly discussed the proposed rates increasing during their Tuesday work session, is expected to officially approve the 2.5% rate hikes for water, sewer, and sanitation during their September 14th council meeting. Mayor Javier Hoven was quick to point out that the rate increases will not be used to repay a $995 million certificate of obligation that council in August approved to pay for the rehabilitation of the city's water treatment plant. That's correct. Assistant City Manager of Administration Affairs, Cindy Muncy, told Council. The rate increases are needed to cover inflation, equipment cost, and an increase in employee salaries. The rate increases will take effect in October. The average Odessa household will see a 52-cent increase in their monthly solid waste bills, Muncy said. Residents who live in apartments or mobile homes will see a 27-cent increase. Small businesses will see a $2 per month increase. The average household will see their sewer rates increase by 53 cents per month, and residents who use 2,000 gallons or less per month will see their bills go up by 32 cents per month, Muncy said. Water users will also see a 2.5% increase in their bills, with users of 4,000 gallons per month seeing their bills go up by $1.92, and rates for residents who use 2,000 gallons will increase by $1.32. Qualifying senior citizens 65 years or older will pay $1 per 2,000 gallons. Crane student heading for National FFA Convention by Ruth Campbell. All of Taylor's Valeria's hard work has culminated with her selection as a Texas voting delegate at the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana. A Crane High School senior, Valeria will head to the Midwest City October 27th through the 30th. A variety of venues will be used for the event. While there, She will attend some meetings and vote on some matters, including new national officers. Jolie Seaburn, the agriculture teacher who leads the Crane FFA program, said national champions are also awarded that week. FFA has three different seasons, Seaborn said. You have your LDEs, which is your leadership development events, and you have your CDEs, that's your career development events. And then you have your speaking events. So the kids that have made it out of their state level and made it to the nationals, they're all going to be competing that week and going to be trying to be national champions. Crane is in Area 2 FFA, which encompasses the largest landmass in Texas. I was a chapter officer first my freshman year. My sophomore and my junior year, I was a district officer for the Big Bend District. And my junior, going into my senior year, I decided that I wanted to be an area officer and go through a series of questions and interview one-on-one with 10 different people that are also in FFA. You have a stand-and-deliver topic, and you have to speak to other fellow FFA members, and they will rate you. Then, at the end, you come up with a speech, and you express your feelings for FFA and say why you would like to be an area officer in front of Area 2, and they vote you in. Valerial said, the 17-year-old, who will be 18 this month, has been in FFA all 4 years of high school. A big part of her interest in the organization comes from her dad. Along with her sister, she also has a stepbrother. He was very big on ag, and then once my sister got into high school, she joined FFA, Valerial said. Going to the national convention, she noted, is a big honor, especially for a small school in Crane. You really get to show out to everyone and just be on your best behavior, and I'm one of the very few from Texas going, so we have to honor Texas over there, too, Valerial said. She added that there are also students attending from Seminole, Sweetwater, and Wall. I'm going to be a voting delegate. I am voting the new national officers into place, she said. If they have any changes in the Constitution or the national rules of any contest, they will put that before in parliamentary procedure and vote on it, Seaborn said. All of the delegates have a vote. Valerial has to spend a lot of time formally dressed. On a recent Tuesday, she wore her official dress, an FFA jacket, long-sleeved white shirt, a scarf, slacks or pantyhose, and solid black shoes. When you go to the national convention or any convention, it's really hard to keep up with your children because they all look the same. They all just blend in, but it's cool because that kind of gets them out of their shell, Seaborn says. Something Valerial is looking forward to is seeing the different names on the back of the FFA jackets members are wearing. I'll show you the back of mine. It says, Texas in the Area 2 citation, Valerial said. Seaborn said every FFA jacket nationwide says where they're from. Most of them are basic and say Crane, Texas. Once you get the honor of being an area officer, your Texas gets moved up to the top and then it has your area association, Seaborn added. You can tell their level based on their jackets and pins. Fun fact, Verrill said. I actually have a chapter, district, and area jacket. The last person that went to the National Convention from Crane was Verrill's sister, Ashley, who is now attending West Texas A&M University in Canyon. Taylor said Ashley plans to become an agriculture teacher. Formed in 2015, the Crane FFA chapter has 35 members, Seaborn said. Valeria said she is honored to be following in her sister's footsteps. She definitely has led me in the right direction in life, and I've always looked up to her, Valeria said. She added that she, too, wants to become an agriculture teacher, but she's not sure where she's going to school yet. Valeria said she enjoys FFA because she likes connecting with people and has picked up a lot of leadership skills. I have learned so much through FFA that I don't think I would have ever learned without it, she said. She added that she shows pigs but won't be participating in the Permian Basin Fair. I don't do summer pigs, especially this summer, because I was always at something for FFA. I did not have time for an animal, but I will be doing it later in the fall, she said. Going to Indianapolis doesn't just mean packing for a trip. It involves a lot of preparation. There's actually a lot that goes into it, Verrill said. A lot of studying. I would say knowing who you're going for, especially with how they talk, how their mannerisms are, so we know who we're choosing and who is right. She said they look for someone who will represent them well throughout the whole journey, like the national level, and just making sure they're going to take good care of us as well. OPD Remembers Fallen Officers by OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department will pay tribute to two fallen officers, Corporal Arlie Jones and Corporal Scott Gardner, at 7:30 a.m. today. This marks the 14th anniversary of their passing, September 8, 2007, when they were killed in the line of duty while responding to a domestic violence call. Jones and Gardner were killed instantly after they were shot with a shotgun by Larry Neal White. Corporal Abel Marquis was also critically wounded in the line of duty by White. Marquis was transported to Medical Center Hospital and then was later taken to University Medical Center in Lubbock, where he died on September 12, 2007. White died on May 31, 2011, before his judgment in court. The Odessa Police Department Honor Guard will place a wreath at the memorial statue on the front lawn of the police department. This wreath will be displayed Wednesday from sunrise until sunset in remembrance of the officers, and anyone wishing to show their respects is encouraged to visit the memorial during that time. OPD will hold a separate observance for Marquis on Sunday. COVID hospital numbers fall a bit, by Laura Dennis. Health officials continue to warn against large indoor gatherings and to push for Odessans to get vaccinated against COVID. During a Tuesday Zoom COVID call with Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center, officials detailed lower numbers than last week. ORMC Chief of Staff Dr. Rohith Saravana and MCH Chief Nursing Officer Christian Abbott Timmons reported the lower COVID patient numbers, but reminded Odessans that even with the dip in the inpatients, that the numbers remain significant. Timmons said MCH had 89 total COVID patients in-house, with 35 in critical care, and of those 35, there were 33 on ventilators. Timmons said MCH also had 18 staff out. She said the drop-off from last week's more than 100 patients was good news, and also an uptick in those seeking vaccines is good news. MCH's ProCare Clinic on 42nd Street will be closed temporarily beginning September 13th so that those resources can be reallocated to the ProCares at JBS and on the West Side. We will have more open hours to serve more who are ill or who are seeking a vaccine, she said of the coming temporary closure. Boosters will be rolled out soon, and we are still encouraging everyone to get the first and second vaccine. She said the Regeneron clinics are still bringing in 50 to 70 patients a day. If you are positive, don't wait, Timmons said. Get in front of a provider and get a referral so there is early intervention. Timmons also thanked St. Mary's Central Catholic School for a gift of uplifting cards for the MCH staff. Thank you so much. Saravana said ORMC had 27 COVID patients with 18 in ICU and 7 of those on ventilators. He said 42% of those are under age 50 and 90% are unvaccinated. Put this disease behind us by getting vaccinated. Odessa motorcyclist dies in rollover. By OA News at OAOA.com. A 59-year-old Odessa motorcyclist died after he reportedly rolled on the entrance ramp near Gardendale. The reported fatal rollover happened at 3:25 p.m. September 4th at the intersection of U.S. Highway 385 and State Highway 158, about 2 miles west of Gardendale. Randy L. O'Neill, 59, of Odessa, was driving a 2003 Harley-Davidson motorcycle east on the entrance ramp of State Highway 158 from U.S. Highway 385, the press release detailed. The motorcycle was traveling at an unsafe speed and left the roadway and rolled, the release stated. O'Neill was pronounced dead at the scene by an Ector County medical examiner. O'Neill wasn't wearing a helmet. Dinosaurs Invade Midland by OA News at OAOA.com. The Jurassic Quest drive-thru will debut at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena September 10th through the 19th. It is billed as the family can't-miss event of the summer, the nation's biggest dinosaur event with more than 70 true-to-life dinosaurs and more than 2.5 million visitors nationwide. With 3 character-led audio tours to choose from, baby dinos, a fierce T-Rex, and 50-foot megalodon, guests embark on the adventure of a lifetime to view 70 photorealistic dinosaurs recreated with leading paleontologists that move and make sounds all from their own vehicles. Public opening day is 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Hours are 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays and 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays. Thursdays and Fridays Wednesdays are at 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. It will be closed Mondays and Tuesdays. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. September 19th. Tickets and information can be found at www.JurassicQuest.com. $49 per carload up to 8 people. Tickets must be purchased online in advance. Jurassic Quest operates with COVID-19 safety protocols in accordance with county, state, and CDC guidelines. Two people dead after fatal collision by OA News at OAOA.com. Two passengers died as a result of a single vehicle collision over the weekend, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. The fatal collision reportedly happened at 2:47 a.m. September 5th in the 4000 block of East 52nd Street. Investigation showed a black 2007 Chevrolet Tahoe being operated by Lionel Torres of Odessa was traveling west on 52nd Street at a high rate of speed before leaving the roadway and striking a fence and a tree. Torres and a rear passenger, identified as Alexis Luna, were ejected and transported to Medical Center Hospital with life-threatening injuries. The front passenger, identified as Brian Contreras, was pronounced dead at the scene. OPD announced Tuesday morning that Luna had also died. Next of kin have been notified. The investigation continues. Local News Roundup. Job Seekers Workshop. A Job Seekers Workshop series led by Human Resources Professionals has been scheduled from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Wednesday throughout September at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Mask encouraged. Visit tinyurl.com/KEP3WEB5. Flourish Women's Event. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 9008 Andrews Highway, has scheduled a Flourish Women's Event with guest minister April Austin Simmons at 7 p.m. Friday. Tickets are $15 per person. For tickets, visit ocfc.org/flourish. For more information, visit 432-368-7714 or email ocfc@ocfc.org. Free Business Workshops. Shell Oil Company, in collaboration with Lyft Fund, will offer a series of free September online and in-person business seminars to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing small business owners in the Permian Basin with the technical, business, and soft skills needed to succeed. Classes will be offered in English and Spanish September 11th, 18th, and 21st. Classes will be taught on Zoom and at various locations in Odessa, Pecos, and Monahans. To learn more about participating in the Shell LiveWire Permian Basin Pilot Program, visit www.shell.us/LiveWire. Shell LiveWire is the flagship enterprise development program of Shell. The program strengthens local economies across the globe by promoting entrepreneurship and developing entrepreneurs, according to a program news release. Lift Fund is a San Antonio-based nonprofit community small business lender that provides capital, financial coaching, tools, and resources to entrepreneurs who do not have access to loans from commercial sources. Since inception, Lift Fund has provided over $392 million in capital, propelling the dreams of more than 24,000 diverse small businesses in 14 states. Taste of the Permian Basin. The 37th annual Taste of the Permian Basin has been scheduled for October 7th at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street in Midland. Sponsor preview party will take place from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. General admission is from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. $40 in advance or $50 at the door. Featured vendors: Barn Door Steakhouse, 10 Sports Bar and Grill, Coca-Cola, Culligan of West Texas, the Cody Coffee Company, ECISD Culinary Arts, Geraldo's Casita, Johnny's Barbecue Midland, La Margarita, MISD Culinary Arts, Mulberry Cafe, Ranchland Hills, Rockin' Q Smokehouse, Rosa's Cafe and Tortilla Factory, Taco Villa, and more to be added. No strollers or carriers will be permitted. Sponsorships are available. To sponsor, visit tinyurl.com/3WP9RD6D. For more information, visit tastethebasin.com or call 432-563-5233. Lunch and Lecture. The Petroleum Museum Brown Bag Lunch and Lecture Series presents John Trichetti, Literacy and Education in the Permian Basin, at 11:30 a.m. September 9th. Trichetti is the Executive Director of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, an organization whose purpose is to promote awareness of low literacy and illiteracy, providing access to family and adult literacy programming. Trichetti is also currently the Midland ISD District 5 trustee. Please join as Trichetti describes what the Literacy Coalition and MISD are doing to improve literacy and education in the Permian Basin. Obituaries. Joe Francis Boring, Odessa. Joe Francis Boring, 73, left this earth and went to her heavenly home on September 4th, 2021. She passed away peacefully at her home in Odessa, Texas, surrounded by her loved ones. Visitation will be Thursday, September 9th, 2021, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Faith Fellowship Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, September 9th, 2021, at Faith Fellowship Church, with Pastor Becky Hand officiating. Joe was born in Midland, Texas, on February 20th, 1948, to Joe Hubert and Frances Lawana McClure Davenport. Joe is preceded in death by her parents and her husband. She leaves behind, to cherish her memories, daughter Carmen Witt and husband Chuck, son Zeb Foster, daughter Amber Bridges, and husband Seth, son Jesse Boring, stepdaughters Tori Clark and Carmen Diaz, stepsons Derek Boring and wife Rilla, and David Boring. Also left to cherish Joe's memories are brother Jeff Davenport and wife Stacy, as well as cousins, nieces, and nephews. Joe was also blessed with grandchildren whom she loved dearly. Memorials may be given to the West Texas Food Bank. The family wishes to extend their sincere thanks to the doctors, nurses, and staff at Texas Oncology Home Hospice and the care providers with Home Instead. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Jean Clifton Burroughs, Midland. Jean Clifton Burroughs went to her heavenly home on Monday, August 30, 2021. Jean was born at home on May 28, 1935, in Roby, Texas. Jean is preceded in death by her husband Bill Burroughs and her companion John Dunn, whom she met later in life. Sisters Rose Knight, Charlene Parker, Betty May Clan, and her brother C.J. Clifton. Jean is survived by her son Mike Young and wife Tricia, son Ricky Young and wife Elsa, son Tony Young and wife Carla, grandchildren, many great-grandchildren, one great-great-granddaughter, two brothers, Tommy Clifton and Billy Wayne Clifton, and wife Georgia, sister-in-law Sandy Clifton, as well as many nieces and nephews. A graveside memorial will be scheduled at a time to be announced later at the Fort Stockton Cemetery, Fort Stockton, Texas. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the borough's young family at this time. Antonio Serrano Sauceda, Odessa. Antonio S. Sauceda was born on March 5, 1937, in Villa Ocampo, Durango, Mexico. He was born to Jose Sauceda and Faustina Serrano, who preceded him in death. He married Clotilda Carrillo in 1963, who also precedes him in death. He is survived by his six children, Hernando Sauceda, Fierro, her husband, Alberto Fierro, Antonio Sauceda, Irma Sauceda, Juan Jose Sauceda, Angelica Sauceda Hernandez, her husband, Rogelio Hernandez, Rebecca Sauceda Santisteban, her husband, Sammy. He is also survived by his 13 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. He is survived by his brothers, Rafael Sauceda and Francisco Sauceda. He will be missed by many nieces and nephews who loved and respected him. Death Notices. Michael Joseph Carrasco, Odessa. Michael Joseph Carrasco, 43, of Odessa, died Thursday, September 2, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled as private, September 10, 2021, Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Stephen N. Cortez, Odessa. Stephen N. Cortez, 50, of Odessa, Texas, died Sunday, August 29, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 9th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa, 2nd Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home. Carolyn Ruth Hendrick, Crane. Carolyn Ruth Hendrick, 73, of Odessa, died Tuesday, August 31st, in Crane. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, September 9th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel. Robert Troy Joyner, Odessa. Robert Troy Joyner, 62 of Odessa, died Sunday, September 5th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 3 p.m. September 10th at First Baptist Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens. Damon Lionel Love, Kermit. David Lionel Love, 47, died Thursday, September 2nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home. Manuel Bernal Mancha, Odessa. Manuel Bernal Mancha, 94 of Odessa, died Friday, September 3rd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 11 a.m. September 10th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens of Odessa. Raymond Earl Pete McAvee, Odessa. Raymond Earl Pete McAvee, 94 of Odessa, died Saturday, September 4th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 9th, 2021 at Sunset Memorial Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens. Esperanza B. Navarrete, Odessa. Esperanza B. Navarrete, 84 of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, August 21st in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, September 10th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles Section. Family and friends are officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.